The Roman orator and statesman Marcus Cicero from 100 BCE believed that there were no miracles because he said, a miracle is something that shouldn't be possible, but if it happens, then it obviously is possible, so it isn't a miracle. But there is another meaning to the word miracle, which is an event that excites wonder. And in fact, that's what miracle really meant originally. It's from the Latin mirare, meaning to wonder at. We have a hint of that in Spanish when you say mira, mira, you know, look, look. It has that sense of something wonder, with wonder. Now, a miracle may be something that's rare or maybe something that's common. What makes it a miracle is whether it excites wonder. And that may depend on the person witnessing it. In other words, the miracles may not be so much out there as in you and in how much you let yourself be amazed. Albert Einstein put it this way. He said, there are only two ways to live your life. One is though nothing is a miracle, and the other is as if everything is. If you look at the stories of the miracles that Jesus did, you can debate whether they were supernatural or a matter of curing psychosomatic illnesses or placebo effect. But you will find that he almost always uses miracles as signs, that is, as a way to change people, to change the way they looked at the world. This, I think, may be more important than whether they literally happened or not. Consider the healing of the leper in the Gospel of Mark. A leper came to him, begging him, and kneeling, he said to him, Jesus, if you choose, you can make me clean. Moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I do choose, be made clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. Now the first thing you need to know here is that the Greek word translated as leprosy is lepra. However, lepra did not mean leprosy as we understand it today. It meant any skin condition where your skin got scaly or flaky. So it could have been psoriasis, which I have, or any fungus infection. And as you know, these can be stress-related, so a faith cure could indeed improve the condition. But what's more important here is actually something else. Jesus touched the leper. He touched him. You did not do that in ancient society, in Jewish society. It was very important to keep your distance from people with diseases, especially skin diseases, so you wouldn't catch what they had and then be ostracized yourself. So-called lepers were forced to live apart from society, and if they dared to speak to anyone, they always did so from a distance. What Jesus did was break the rules. He touched the untouchable. What he basically said was this: society says this man has a disease, which is understood as his untouchableness. I'm going to touch him. This little part of society, am going to take away his untouchability. And the rest of you have a choice. You can either reject him and me, now that I've touched him, or accept us both. It's up to you. Now, did the man's skin condition disappear suddenly, as the gospel says? I don't know. I think the real miracle was Jesus' challenging the purity rules in the first place. Or consider the woman who suffered from a hemorrhage for 12 years and touched the hem of his garment. I remember, and I studied to be a priest before I became a Unitarian minister, and we were in a Catholic seminary in high school, and we were going through the story, and the priest said, now, you know, tell me about the story. And one of the kids said, there was a woman with hemorrhoids who touched his... it was hemorrhaging, you need to know that when women were menstruating in Jewish society, they had to withdraw from society because they were considered unclean. Blood was considered unclean, which is why you couldn't eat meat with blood in it. So you can imagine how ostracized this woman was since she had a flow of blood all the time. So what does she do? She knows she's not supposed to touch anyone because she's unclean, but maybe she can just touch the fringe of Jesus' garment. So he does. She does. And when Jesus feels it, he doesn't chastise her. He says, good for you. Your faith has made you well. He lets her touch him, and in approving of her behavior, he is challenging the rules of exclusion. Just like when the sinner woman washes his feet with her tears and dries them with her hair. Remember that story? And the scribes and Pharisees are offended that he would let a sinful person touch him, especially a woman. But Jesus says, in effect, I don't accept your rules. All are welcome at my table. And remember the woman caught in adultery. And the people say, according to the law of Moses, she should be stoned to death. And Jesus says, whoever is without sin, cast the first stone. Now, this isn't usually counted as a miracle story, but isn't it? He refuses to cut someone off, and he challenges everyone else to either go along with him or cast the first stone. Very powerful and empowering. How do you think the woman felt when she left Jesus? Jesus challenges the closure of his society, the non-inclusiveness, by including the unclean and the sinners and the lepers of his day. And in so doing, he empowers the people who were outcast. He says to them, don't let these others call you impure. Don't let them wall you off and condemn you. Come in and take your rightful power. You are worthy. Powerful words. Miracle-making words. Or consider the healing of the sick man at the pool of Bethesda. Apparently, there was a pool of water there where the blind and the lame would gather, and when the water was stirred up, whoever got in fast enough would be healed. And Jesus sees a man who's been waiting there for 38 years, and he asks him, do you want to be healed? And the man doesn't actually say yes. He just offers up an excuse. He says, well, sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is troubled, and while I'm going down, someone else always steps down before me. So he's been waiting for 38 years with an excuse. Which reminds me of a story I heard about modern times. There are three people fishing on a lake, and suddenly they see Jesus walking on the water and over to their boat. When he gets there, one of them says, Jesus, could you heal my back pain? Ever since I got shrapnel in my back from the war, I've never felt right. And Jesus says, certainly, and he touches the man's back, and he feels great. Then the next angler turns to him, and she says, Jesus, could you heal my nearsightedness? I have really bad vision, and it's so bad my glasses can't correct for it. And Jesus takes off her glasses, throws them in the water, and she can see perfectly. And then Jesus turns to the third fisherman, and he puts up his hands and says, don't touch me, I'm on long-term disability. Well, this story is kind of similar. Jesus asks him if he wants to be healed, and instead of saying yes, he offers up an excuse as to why he's been waiting for 38 years. And Jesus cuts through all of that and says, in effect, what are you waiting for? Take up your pallet now and walk. You don't need to wait for the water to stir or for someone to carry you down. Get up now. And he does. And of course, later, the Pharisees get ticked off because the man is carrying his pallet on the Sabbath, and that's considered work. But Jesus doesn't care. He's changing the rules. And when Jesus casts out demons, whether it be from the man who couldn't speak or from the woman who was bent over with a spirit of infirmity, he is liberating people, but in a way they can accept. He doesn't say, look, there's nothing holding you back. He merely casts out what they believe is holding them back, and they become free. In my book, that's still a miracle. Maybe a better miracle than the supernatural one. He even talks with a Samaritan woman at the well, and that's a double whammy. Conversing with a Samaritan, the Jew's enemy, is bad enough, but with a woman and alone? You didn't do that. The gospel says his disciples were astonished when they got back from town and saw this, but none of them asked him about it. Jesus includes. He gathers people together. He touches them and takes away their untouchability. And this is a miracle that can still happen today. The lepers may be different, the demons may vary, and the miracle worker may be someone you'd never expect. But they still happen. In witness of which, I leave you with this story from a mother in California, though the question of who worked the miracle may be up for grabs. Here's her story. It was Sunday, Christmas. Our family had spent a holiday in San Francisco, but in order for us to be back at work on Monday, we found ourselves driving the 400 miles back home to Los Angeles on Christmas Day. We stopped for lunch in King City. The restaurant was nearly empty. We were the only family, and ours were the only children. I heard Eric, my one-year-old, squeal with glee. "Hi there!" The two words he always thought were one. "Hi there!" And he pounded his fat baby hands, whack, 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 on the metal high chair. His face was alive with excitement. His eyes were wide, his gums bared in a toothless grin. He wriggled and giggled, and then I saw the source of his merriment. A tattered rag of a coat, obviously bought by someone else eons ago, dirty, greasy, and worn, baggy pants, spindly body, toes that poked out of would-be shoes, a shirt that had ring around the collar all over, and a face like none other, gums as bare as Eric's. "Hi there, baby. Hi there, big boy. I see you, Buster." My husband and I exchanged a look that was a cross between "what do we do?" and "poor devil." Our meal came, and the banging and the noise continued. Now the old bum was shouting across the room, "Do you know patty cake? Attaboy! Do you know peekaboo? Hey, look, he knows peekaboo too." Eric continued to laugh his answer, "Hi there." Every call was echoed. Nobody thought it was cute. The guy was a drunk and a disturbance. I was embarrassed. My husband went to pay the check, imploring me to get Eric and meet him in the parking lot, and I bolted for the door. As I came closer to the man, I turned my back, walking to sidestep him and any air he might be breathing. And as I did so, Eric, all the while with his eyes riveted on his new best friend, leaned over my arm, reaching out with both arms to a baby's pick-me-up position. In a split second of balancing my baby and turning to counter the weight, I came eye to eye with the old man. Eric was lunging for him, arms spread wide. The bum's eyes asked and implored, "Would you let me hold your baby?" There was no need for me to answer, since Eric propelled himself from my arms to the man. And suddenly, a very old man and a very young baby consummated their love relationship. Eric laid his tiny head on the man's ragged shoulder. The man's eyes closed, and I saw tears beneath the lashes. His aged hands, full of grime and pain and hard labor, gently, so gently, cradled my baby's bottom and stroked his back. I stood awestruck. The old man rocked and cradled Eric in his arms for a moment, and then his eyes opened and he set squarely on mine. He said in a firm, commanding voice, "You take care of this baby." And somehow I managed, "I will," from a throat that contained a stone. He pried Eric from his chest, unwillingly, lovingly, longingly, as though he was in pain. I held my arms open to receive my baby, and again the gentleman addressed me, "God bless you, ma'am. You've given me my Christmas gift." I said nothing more than a muttered thanks. With Eric in my arms, I ran for the car. My husband wondered why I was crying and holding Eric so tightly, and why I was saying, "My God, forgive me." This little baby was a miracle worker, a savior of sorts. He didn't know it, but he did something very similar to what Jesus did. He touched the untouchable, which is perhaps why Jesus could say, "You must become like a little child if you want to enter the kingdom." In fact, I wonder if we're seeing a miracle right now with the young people who have marched in Washington, D.C. and around the country to get us to change our views about the inevitability of gun violence. May you find such miracles, signs and marvels that help you see in ways you've never seen before, wondrous surprises that help you open your arms, embracing one more soul than you thought you could. This is what Jesus and Easter, for that matter, and young people have to offer us. And as I heard someone put it once, you're never too old until you've lost your marvels. Your marvels. Have a marvelous day.